Was ist gut? Ein Podcast des Deutschen Design Clubs.
Seit über 3 Jahrzehnten arbeitet unser heutiger Gast mit Design für Nachhaltigkeit. Er steht für die Idee der sozialen Innovation. Vor 15 Jahren gründete er DESIS, ein internationales Netzwerk von Designschulen, die im Bereich Design, soziale Innovation und Nachhaltigkeit tätig sind. Und im letzten Jahr wurde er von der Design Research Society mit dem Lifetime Achievement Award ausgezeichnet. Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge, die in Zusammenarbeit mit Bayern Design im Rahmen der diesjährigen Munich Creative Business Week entstanden ist. Die MCBW findet vom 10. bis 18. Mai in ganz München statt. Alle spannenden Events und Infos dazu findet ihr im Programm auf mcbw.de. Im DDcast sind regelmäßig Persönlichkeiten zu Gast, die im internationalen Design Maßstäbe setzen. Ezio Manzini ist jedoch auch für uns ein ganz besonderer Gast. Er hat mit seiner Arbeit dem Design für soziale Innovation weltweit Gehör verschafft. Mit seinem Klassiker mit dem Titel Design, When Everybody Designs, An Introduction to Design for Social Innovation, hat er ein regelrechtes Handbuch für die Bewegung geschrieben. Ihr könnt Ezio Manzini auch live erleben, denn am Montag, den 12. Mai, spricht er beim MCBW Design Summit im Munich Urban Collab. Mit ihm spricht nun mein Kollege Georg Christoph Bertsch.
Oh, today we're talking to Ezio Manzini. It's great to have you on our program, Ezio. How are you?
Well, thank you. Very well.
You will speak at the Munich Creative Business Week, which is a very good occasion for us to invite you to the DDcast program. And your topic is vibrant communities as project-based social networks. And it goes on, what design can do. Lessons learned from 20 years of social innovation. So my question now is, what can design do in this context?
Well, it's a good question. I think that we can do a lot. But let me, to explain what we can do, we have to a little bit to focalize on the meaning of some words. It's the overall meeting is about communities and about lively and brilliant communities. So this is not only my topic, it's the topic of the overall session event. And in my view, it's very important to say something about communities because this term is used. I like to use it. But the meaning could be very large and it could be stretched in many different directions. So to understand what design can do, we have to start from this point. We had and still exist the pre-modern communities. The pre-modern communities exist in a quasi-natural way. So it's not natural because they are cultural, but they happen in time and they transform. And nobody really is concerned on how to generate and regenerate the traditional communities. But modernities, especially the modernities that we have known in Europe, has played a role to melt the traditional communities. So we still have some traditional communities, but the general trend, one way to talk about modernity, is about individualization. And individualization means to melt the traditional link with the families, with the neighborhoods, with the village, etc. So, we arrived to be a very individualized community. But for many reasons, and we can discuss later, this super individualized community is very problematic by many points of view. First of all, we have this idea of this reality of being lonely. And loneliness is becoming in our cities, and not only in our cities, also in the village. For instance, I live in the countryside, and many people are exactly as in the city, very lonely because they do not have the traditional links. So when we talk about communities today, we talk about the possibility to regenerate communities that are not the same of the past, because you cannot go back to the condition of the past, but are communities that are regenerated thanks to some actions. So something has to happen to regenerate communities. And at the end of the day, to tell it in a very short way, what has to happen? That group of people that are individualized, so separated one with the other one, start conversation to do something together, and doing something together, they start to recreate the social fabric. And therefore, this is why I call it, I call them project-based communities, because at the end of the day, these communities are built thanks to the fact that the people find projects of doing together. And the way to build the community making, as is always said, is imagining projects that people can do together, and afterward, the interlink in between many different projects generate the communities. This project not necessarily ask for professional designers. And the majority are done by people that in some way are capable to design, because luckily human beings have also this kind of gift. They are capable to design. But at a certain point, some expert is needed, because when a certain idea move on, it's also needed to have somebody that have some tools, that have some experience. And so there is also the role of professional designers. So to conclude for the moment, it's possible. The community have to be built. They could be lively and dynamic if the projects are lively and dynamics. And they have to be, what has to be done has to be designed. And the designer can play their role. Can play a role for food, feeding the people imagination, because also the imagination has to be fed so we can bring new ideas, making maybe also some provocative act that generate new ideas, but also helping group of people to move in the design process of the idea. And at a certain point, when some idea very mature, maybe it's also needed to design some physical environment, to design also some formal services, and sometimes also some dedicated product.
But when you talk about recreation and regeneration, it won't be the same community like in the past. But the question is, what is regenerated? What is recreated? And isn't there also, let's say, a negative side to the traditional communities in the countryside?
Well, what is, this is, of course, could be a very long discourse. The past is past. So
that's what I thought.
It will not come back. Somebody could be nostalgic, somebody not. Personally, I'm not so nostalgic. Nevertheless, there has been something that has been very human, that was that people need also to have relationship with each one, with the other ones. I found out in my work on design for social innovation, I summarize in three main concepts and practice. That is collaboration. The second one is proximity. And the third one is care. So I think that collaboration means that we human beings are social animals. So basically, we are done to collaborate with the others. And therefore, we like to collaborate if the conditions are given. We need relationships that are of proximity, the closeness that is not only being physically near, but is also near in the relational way. I think that in every language that I know, to be in proximity, to be close, is also something not only functional. We can do something together because we are close, but also we are open, we are empathic one with the other ones. And this brings to the third one, that probably is the most important one, that is about care. And somebody says that our society has been defined as a careless society, society without care. But care is very important, and care can be helped by some professional service. But care is a kind of relationship that we can exchange in between people. exactly because we are in proximity and because we collaborate in doing something together. So these three terms are not to be regenerated as in the past, but they have to be regenerated as a very basic condition of the human beings. So we need these three, and this, when we say regenerate the condition for collaborating, be in proximity and caring. And we have to invent, probably we will talk about a hybrid collaboration and hybrid proximity and hybrid care, because we can combine the fact that today we live, and we will live, you know, also in the future, in a double space, the physical one and the digital one. But at the end of the day, we are human because we have a physical body in the physical space. So the hierarchy in between the two has to be put vice versa. Because we are human, we have to use the technologies, including the digital, including maybe the artificial intelligence, maybe, to bring back ourselves in our body, in our skin, in contact with the environment, physical environment, and in contact with the other bodies that are the other people.
If you, in your 2021 book, Livable Proximity, just to get back to that term, proximity, you explored the concept of proximity in urban design and social innovation, and in the contrast to scenarios of distance. So how should we understand these two terms as being connected through a continuum, proximity to scenarios of distance? Or is this simply a contradiction? So how do you use these terms? Because I think they were very interesting, also practical to use in design activity in the urban space.
So in some way, with the first question and the first answer, we already put on the table the concepts that are needed to answer to your question. So let's start in a very phenomenological way. So look into what is happening. In the pre-modern societies, the issue about proximity or distance was not an issue, because the human being, to do whatever, from having a family toward working toward organizing your daily life, you had to be at a short distance. So you could send a letter, basically everything had to be near. Therefore, you had these dense medieval cities with all the activities that was mixed together very nearby, the rich with the poor, the different craftsmen, and all the people was in the same place, because the life is done by the interconnection of these different functions. Modernity said, no, look, this is not good, it's not hygienic, it's not efficient. So imagine La Ville Radieuse of Le Corbusier. That is a big roads, a big building, very distant, the one with the other one, and many cars. So this image has been incredibly strong and has been super successful. And practically everywhere in the world, the new cities have been done following this image, in this direction. But now we see the problems. So because those cities are that we can call the city of distance, because is the distance in between the different monological zones. So you separate the different activities. And afterward, we recompose our life, that is a continuum, moving from one to the other one. And this, of course, generates the traffic, and this, of course, generates pollution, etc. But not only, and this is a little bit more complex to understand, but if we move in this way, if we don't have a place where many things happen, there is less and less possibility to find other people and to start a conversation, and starting the conversation to regenerate, as I said before, the social fabric. So the city of distance is not only an environmental problem, it's also a social and psychological problem that generates the city desertification, as we are seeing now, and the social and, in my view, also political problems that we have in this moment that are largely related to the fact that the people feel alone, and feeling alone, they feel unsafe, and feeling unsafe, they try to find some enemies somewhere. But this is a discussion that unfortunately today is very relevant. In any case, somebody started to understand that this model that had been so powerful for exactly one century, should be in some way changed. We should find something else. So the discussion about having a city where more or less what you need is nearby, has a very long story. But only recently, it moved from being an idea for a small group of people toward becoming something that could be effectively done. And it can be done because we have had 20 or 30 years of social innovation that started to make some experiment of what does it mean to reorganize the life of people around the place in which you live. And at a certain point, we have had some cities and some mayors that took this idea, normally it's called the 15-minute city. I prefer to call city of proximity, but it's the same thing, more or less. And there have been some policies that moved in this direction. And the idea started to be relatively, at least in terms of words, quite diffuse. In Italy, practically, in the election that we have had in the past 2 years, I have not seen any mayor or willing to be mayor that was not thinking or to propose something related to the 15-minute city. Afterwards, sometimes they tell it, but they do not do it so much, because even if it appears as such a simple idea, because it's very simple, the strength of this idea that is very simple, everybody understands immediately what is the 15-minute city, it's really in contrast with what has been done for one century. So it's not so easy to change, to reshape all the system of services and relationships in this direction. And I think that this is the... Maybe I have only to say one thing that is very important. As you understand, I am supporting and I'm very convinced about the value of this idea of the city of proximity. But in some way, the city of proximity is in contrast not only to the city of the distance and its possible updating. So now many of the cities, they say the green and smart cities, at the end of the day, are city of distance with some technology inside. So in my view, this is a way not to change really the vision and the model of the cities. But there is another thing that is happening that is very, very, another scenario, if we want to call it in this way, very dystopic, that we can call everything at home and from home. That means the city in which you imagine that practically everything can be done in your little box, that is your private home, and because everything can arrive at home and everything can be done by home. That I am not, again, I am also somebody that work very frequently in this smart working. But if we reorganize all the cities of the societies, because this is valuable not only for the city, but also for the small villages, in this way, it's the end of the city and the end of the communities, because you have a kind of desertification of what happens around. And we can see, I don't know how much in Germany, but in many places that I know, starting from Italy, starting also from the countryside where I am, the proximity shops and the proximity services are progressively disappearing. So this is the end of all the social fabric that traditionally existed in this place. So the city of proximity, or the city of the 15 minutes, has two enemies. On one side, the traditions of the city of modernity, updated as a city of smart and green city, on one side. And on the other side, this the other one that is not advertised so much because nobody dare to present it as a scenario, that is killing all the life that has characterized the city, eliminating it, transporting everything online.
That's great.
Are you happy?
Thank you very much for this insight into proximity.
So that's a classic. I don't think that we can discuss all the questions that we have because we are running out of time. But I would like to one thing which I think is very important actually to hear from you is this, let's say, kind of definition of what social design means to you. I think this is for the practitioners. It's not so much for the theoretically working people, but for those who really work, let's say, calling up this, how do you transform a city from this distance aspect to proximity? So this includes, besides policy, besides, let's say, negotiations on different levels with real estate people, but also it includes social design. So what does social design mean to you, or what kind of definition would you give about social design?
I have to be a little bit boring explaining that social design is not designed for social innovation. So what I was talking about with you until now is under an umbrella that is called design for social innovation. And this design for social innovation is an idea that started more or less 20 years ago in relation to a wave of social innovation. That is the one that I'm describing now. Social design started 15 years ago with Papanek. And the difference is this one. I will say that now they converge, but it's important to understand the difference. Social innovation starts from a moral issue. There are people that are so poor that they cannot afford products, devices that they need for their everyday life. So you can have some designers or group of designers that develop some devices that could be in some way done in a way that can be out from the market and arrive to these people, thanks to some foundation, thanks to voluntary action, thanks to everything that is charity, in the high sense of charity. And therefore, it's very focused on the, let's say, the poor and the marginal and the fragile, but it do not aim in changing the system. So if you design a special oven that can be used in the small villages because the way in which they cook is very unhealthy, this is good, but it do not change the condition of being a remote village, very poor. And the same, if you design a hospital that can be put in the middle of the war, and this is very important, it's fundamental, it's also very risky, and so who do it are heroes, but they do not change the war. So the war still exists, so they do not change the system. So the social design is start from the recognition of something that has to be done and try to do it. Social innovation, design for social innovation, start from the observation in the reality that somebody is capable to do things in a different way, in a radically different way. And in a different way that could be good for them, but also good for the communities and good for the society and good for the environment. So as a designer, you work to stimulate, support, help these groups of people to develop their own ideas. And therefore, what happens? That if they do what I said, and the social innovation that I was referring to until now is called transformative social innovation, because it's a social innovation that, at least at the local scale, changes the system, they work as a system changer. So they change the system, and the design they work with them is a design that help in systemic change. In this case, you have a systemic change, but given that it happens where it can happen, it's not said that they are the poorest. And this means that normally, very frequently, all the social innovation that we have talked about, not only me, but European communities and also worldwide, is mainly done by people that have the time, the energy, and the possibility to give attention of doing something differently. Let's make an example, because otherwise maybe people do not understand what I'm talking about. One of the most classic example, very simple, that I use because everybody understand it. If you want to, if a group of people organize themselves to generate a community garden, they are doing something that is good for them because probably they like the community, the garden. Is good for their own community because the community finally have a garden, and it is good also for the environment and the city because it improves the green of the city. So it's a radical change because a community garden is not a public garden. It's not managed formally by the city, but there are people that organize themselves and generate a commons, a common good. So the fact of generating a common good is a systemic change, even if it's very small. And designer can help in making this happen. So I use this example because it's very simple and everybody can understand, but it could be many others more complex. Now, the people that do the community gardens normally are not the poorest because the poorest do not have time, energy. They have to survive day by day. So the limit of the social innovation that I'm talking about is that normally it did not happen until now. It did not happen in the place where the people are the most poor or fragile or with difficulties. And therefore, you have two symmetrical things. You have something that is a social design that goes directly where there are the people that more need, but they have to make in a charitable way. Or you have somebody that like to do what they want to do, but maybe they are not the more poor. Now, the challenge is to put them together, so to use the good idea, because the idea of the community garden, if it is helped, could be very good also in very poor places, not only in the middle-class places. Or if you have organized a community-supported agriculture group, a food co-op. Also, the food co-op normally are done by middle class, but they could be very good also for the very poor. The issue is to help them in doing it without implying so much of their own energy that is not so much and their own time. So this is the difference. Design can be in both, using different tools, different approach. Now, many of the people that work, it's not my case, but moving from the social design, are talking about the need of having a social design that makes social change. And many of the people, as me, that work on social design for social innovation, think that the social innovation ideas have to be in some way transferred also in the place where there are people with more difficulties.
Oh, thank you very much for this comprehensive explanation with a very good example. I'm absolutely sure that you can help those who work in the field to better understand what they are doing and to also, let's say, have a clear understanding where they can go. So I now only have my last question that we always ask our guests at Dede Cast, which I have sent to you, this question of what is good, which can be answered very openly. It can be answered philosophically, or you could also say, I like strawberry marmalade, whatever you say. I think it's very interesting to have this idea of a positive vision of our guests.
I'm working on social innovation, design for social innovation now since 20 years. And before I was working on design for sustainability since the idea of sustainability emerged 40 years ago. And if I had to, at this time, at my age, as with all this time, I tried to summarize what are the key points. The key points are the three that I already said, are to think and to behave in a collaborative way, to think and to behave in re-establishing proximity, so recognizing that we are mainly a thinking body and we are humans only because we live in this network of life that is the surface of our planet, and care as a kind of mutual exchange with attention and sympathy and eventually capability to help each other. And today, I think that this issue that for me are basic, as I tried to say it before, of every possible imaginable, ecological and just society. Today, it's also a way to try to oppose to the wind of war that we have around us. So if we could imagine a design for peace, it's very difficult to say what to do as design for peace, but for sure, if we imagine to propose that the people could collaborate, that the people could be near, and that the people could take care of each other, this could be a contribution in building conditions for peace.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
It was a great pleasure to talk to you. And I would have had another 10 questions, but I think I see you really answer in a very comprehensive and clear way.
I am not a theoretician. because you make this kind of difference in between the practitioner and the theoretician. The academic, I am academic, but academic do not mean that you have to be academic, for me, in the good sense of the term. But this is another story. I tell you why I think that we should re-qualify the meaning of academic. But in my case, I am a reflexive designer. So a lot of what I did, I do still now, in this period, I'm retired from the Politecnico, but all my life in Politecnico, my group and me, we did the projects. And afterward, if I dare to say what I'm saying, it's because it's a reflection on the project that we are doing. And also now that I am retired from the Politecnico, I'm going around in different schools, but I stay also here in this place. I am active citizen in this place. So this is to say that sometimes there is this kind of sharp division in between practitioners and theoreticians. I think that we need also somebody that is more theoretical, but there is a lot to do in making projects and being reflexive on the projects. And a lot of new ideas can emerge only because you are doing something practically, especially in a moment in which things move so fast. Because for also the one that think that more philosopher, pure philosophers, where they take the ideas, if not looking in real time to what happens in the realities. So designers could be beyond solving problems, etc., but could be also producer of knowledge, of a design knowledge that can be afterward reorganized by philosophers, scientists, or other kind of people, because making things happen, that is our work, we can see what happens when we change something, and therefore we can extract some experiences that can be helpful.
Das war Ezio im Gespräch mit Georg. Diese Ausgabe ist in Zusammenarbeit mit Bayern Design im Rahmen der diesjährigen Munich Creative Business Week entstanden, die vom 10. bis 18. Mai in München stattfindet. Das vielfältige Programm mit spannenden Design-Events findet ihr auf ncbw.de. Wir bedanken uns sehr herzlich für euer Zuhören und wünschen euch wie immer alles Gute und eine kreative Woche. Eure Dedekast-Redaktion.